response team, but that's what they ended up doing. And we organized everything, was out on the ground immediately, set up tents. We worked with Better Family Life. We collaborated. And
Congressman, we have 30 seconds.
Yes, and a time when I was able to see what happens when people don't have access to true care, and what also happens when when everybody doesn't feel safe in their community.
Well, your story is a truly remarkable one. You became the first African-American woman to represent Missouri in Congress, and you've written about it in this incredibly brave book, The Forerunner, A Story of Pain and Perseverance in America. Cori Bush, our guest. We thank you so much for being with us. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for a video news production fellow and a people and culture manager. Learn more at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dean Augusta, Messiah Rhodes. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
Holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, two students are injured in a drive-by shooting at Portland's Jefferson High School.
Portland City Councilors move to increase bike and pedestrian safety on Southeast Powell Boulevard.
And in national news, President Biden will release some strategic oil reserves in hopes of easing gas prices.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 19th, 2022. I'm Althea Billings.
And I'm Ken Jones. Two students were shot outside of Jefferson High School in North Portland on Tuesday in a drive-by shooting after school. The injuries sustained by the students were not life-threatening. Around 4 p.m., students reported hearing around 15 shots and were sent screaming and scrambling for cover. One student was shot in the leg, but luckily made it inside the gym by the time police arrived. Another student sustained a grazed wound to the hand. The 9/11 call was from someone in the neighborhood after hearing gunshots and shouts coming from the school. Police received reports of two teens wearing face masks and driving a white Hyundai Elantra away from the scene. That car apparently crashed nearby on North Alberta and Vancouver Avenue, and the teens ran away. No arrests have been reported. Portland is on track to reach or surpass the number of homicides last year, 92. Portland has already surpassed the number of shootings in 2021. By September of this year, the latest count is 997. Police Chief Chuck Lavelle released a statement after the shooting saying, quote, "I spent many years as the school resource officer at Jefferson, and it has a special place in my heart. It's very concerning when violence like this affects our kids. I'm just grateful There was no loss of life today. I know our investigators will continue to review any information, and I urge anyone who knows anything to come forward.
Portland City Council has adopted a plan to slow traffic on Southeast Powell Boulevard near Cleveland High School. This comes as earlier this month, cyclist Sarah Pliner was hit and killed by a semi-truck at Southeast Powell and Southeast 26th, right outside Cleveland High School. The crash reignited calls from cyclists and transportation safety advocates to improve bike safety in the area. Protesters formed a human barricade for a bike lane last week to push for bike safety improvements to be reinstituted. Some of them were removed in 2018. Southeast Powell is a high crash corridor, and it's a state highway, so it's controlled by the Oregon Department of Transportation, or ODOT. There have been 10 fatal traffic crashes on Southeast Powell since 2017. That's according to Bike Portland. The resolution, adopted unanimously by City Council today, instructs the Portland Bureau of Transportation and ODOT to install a school speed zone outside the high school. The resolution also instructs the transportation agencies to look at freight volume on the highway, other needed safety enhancements, and develop a plan to transfer control of the road from ODOT to PBOT, as was recently done with 82nd Avenue.
Titanium dioxide coatings could help keep roads and bike paths cooler. Like a mineral sunscreen, it works by reflecting UVA and UVB rays from the sun. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more of the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Biking or walking on a hot day can feel like you're in an oven because dark pavement absorbs and retains heat. But applying a special coating to streets and bike paths could help cool them off. Nicole Irozalardo is an urban planning and public health researcher. She's part of a University of Arizona-led team that's testing a product made with titanium dioxide.
It's one of the major ingredients in your mineral sunscreen. And it works by reflecting UVA and UVB rays.
She says it soaks into the pavement and dries clear, so it does not create a glare that could distract drivers. In lab tests, the material has been shown to reduce the surface temperature of pavement. So now Irozalardo's team is working with the city of Tucson to test it on a stretch of road. They'll monitor how it affects air temperature and people's comfort. She says the approach is not a substitute for planting shade trees.
Shade rules the day when it comes to reducing temperature and how we feel it as pedestrians.
But if effective, cool pavement technology could be used in areas where trees cannot grow or would interfere with power lines. So it could help make biking and walking more enjoyable as cities experience more hot days. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
President Biden vows to codify abortion rights, and states brace for an increase in threats to midterm election workers. With these stories and more, it's Nadia Ramlagan with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The court got Roe right nearly 50 years ago, and I believe Congress should codify Roe once and for all.
In Washington Tuesday, President Biden said he would prioritize an abortion rights bill if Democrats retain the House and Senate in November. Assistant Attorney General Christopher Schroeder testified before Senate lawmakers Tuesday on executive privilege, a right presidents can assert to withhold information from the legislative or judicial branches.
Congress is entitled to honest interpretations of the law by the executive branch. I think this president is dedicated to that proposition. He issued a day one executive order affirming the independence of the Justice Department.
Former President Donald Trump and his lawyers continue to argue executive privilege can be used to shield information from his time in office from the Justice Department. The FBI says battleground states like Georgia are likely to see calls for election audits and recounts, and are more likely to see threats and harassment directed at election workers. During a Tuesday debate between Republican Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger and his Democratic challenger, Bea Nguyen, Nguyen called for election worker reforms.
We need to repeal the provisions of Senate Bill 202 that have added additional burden on our election workers, including having to spend critical time going over these mass voter challenges. At least 65,000 Georgians have been challenged.
According to the FBI, among more than 1,000 reports to the task force monitoring threats to election workers, 11% met criteria for further investigative action. Georgia Republican Senate candidate Herschel Walker is doubling down on the veracity of the sheriff's badge he flashed to the audience during a debate last week after accusations the badge was a prop. In a social media video, Walker posed with Johnson County Sheriff Greg Rowland, who vouched for the badge's authenticity.
If Herschel's badge is a prop, then I guess this badge I wear every day to protect the citizen, I guess it's a prop also.
Walker is running against Democratic incumbent Senator Raphael Warnock. Finally, Assistant Secretary of Health and Human Services for Mental Health and Substance Use, Dr. Miriam Delfin-Rittman, announced Tuesday an additional $300 million in funding for new community behavioral health clinics to states, coming from the recently passed gun safety bill.
We want to bring every American and every community hope. A hope ignited by knowing that care is available, that it is accessible, and that it is culturally appropriate.
I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
President Joe Biden announced the release of 15 million barrels of oil from the U.S. Strategic Reserve Wednesday as part of a response to recent oil production cuts announced by the OPEC Plus coalition. This completes the release of 180 million barrels authorized by President Biden in March, sending the Strategic Reserve to around 400 million barrels, its lowest level since 1984. The U.S. government will restock the Strategic Reserve when oil prices are at or lower than $67 to $72 a barrel. Today's 15 million barrel release is less than the country uses in a single day. Gasoline is averaging $3.87 a gallon in the U.S. and $5.30 in Oregon.
Americans are not alone in suffering from inflation. In September, consumer prices in Britain rose 10%, driven by a sharp increase in food prices, nearly 15% higher than a year ago, as well as a spike in energy costs. British Prime Minister Liz Truss pledged to freeze household energy bills, one of the biggest sources of inflation, but had much of her economic agenda scrapped this week by Britain's new finance minister, Jeremy Hunt. Meanwhile, in Europe, the price of bread is up 19% from a year ago, driven by the Ukraine war's effect on grain and energy supplies. The cost of food jumped by nearly 16% in the European Union, while energy prices jumped by around 40%. In the United States, inflation is near a four-decade high, despite efforts by the Federal Reserve to cool the economy. U.S. bread prices have risen 15% in the last year. Nestle and Procter & Gamble, two of the world's largest consumer goods companies, reported increased earnings as they brought in more money from selling fewer goods at higher prices. Last quarter, Nestle raised prices 9.7% and Procter & Gamble raised theirs 9%.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Kay Rambo, editor-in-chief at Street Roots, about this issue's cover story, fighting fire with anti-homeless policies, Medford City Council candidate stirs up anti-poor politics with environmentalism. At 6, you'll hear Encouragementology. At 6:30, it's Free Culture Radio. Then at 7, Culture in Motion with Mike Crenshaw. Tonight's weather will be smoky with an overnight low of 50 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with a high of 69. An unhealthy air advisory is in effect for the Portland metro area until Thursday evening due to smoke from the Nakia Creek fire. The advisory calls for limiting outdoor activities during the smoky conditions. Today in history, in 1945, American actor John Lithgow was born. He began his career in the 1970s and has worked on Broadway and in television and film throughout his career. The quote of the day is from Lithgow, who said, "Time sneaks up on you like a windshield on a bug."
A new study of U.S. births came out today, and it shows the differences babies have in their health outcomes according to race. The trial was published in the journal Pediatrics. It's the largest study ever to look at racial gaps for women who use in vitro fertilization, fertility drugs, or other fertility treatments. Researchers found that higher death rates for infants born to Black women who use fertility treatments than those for white women. And the gap is actually much wider than the gap for babies born without fertility treatments. Deaths within 4 weeks after birth were 4 times higher in babies born to Black mothers who used IVF compared with white mothers who used IVF. For babies born without fertility treatments, infant deaths were 2 times higher for Black mothers compared with white mothers. The study team analyzed data from more than 7 million U.S. births in 2016 and 2017, including more than 93,000 resulting from fertility treatments. Household income wasn't a factor that was analyzed because it wasn't available, but researchers saw racial gaps even after adjusting for age, diabetes, obesity, smoking, and other known maternal risk factors. Women getting fertility care tend to be wealthier on average. However, the study findings suggest that having more money does not protect women seeking fertility treatment from those race-associated outcomes. The study points to the conclusion that Black women seeking fertility treatments may not be getting the highest quality care during pregnancy and after childbirth. The researchers expected that women using fertility treatments could see fewer racial disparities in birth outcomes. Dr. Sarka Lisakona of the University of British Columbia in Vancouver led the research. She said, quote, "We were a bit surprised that this disparity was actually larger than in the general population," end quote. Disparities also existed for Hispanic and Asian mothers who had fertility treatments, but the gaps were less severe. Researchers were unable to analyze results for Indigenous women and Alaska Natives. White women are much more likely than other groups to use fertility treatments. The study's lead investigator said findings should not deter women from pursuing a family.
Crews are digging under a South Dakota residential Indian school after a worker told officials he found 3 potential graves there decades ago. With that story and more, it's Daniel Montano with National Native News.
For National Native News, I'm Daniel Montano, in for Antonia Gonzalez. Crews are excavating the basement of historic Drexel Hall at the Red Cloud Indian School on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. A worker previously told officials that he discovered what looked like 3 graves decades ago, but was told to keep quiet about them at the time. An investigation by Indian Country Today and Reveal found evidence of at least 20 student deaths at the school, at least 1 unmarked grave, and reports of dehumanizing and brutal treatment of the students. The site is just one of hundreds of schools run by the U.S. government and religious groups beginning in the 1800s. Thousands of Native children were forcibly removed from their homes in an attempt to assimilate them into non-Native culture. The Kansas Historical Society is also moving forward with a ground-penetrating radar survey of nearly 12 acres to search for unmarked graves. The Kansas City Star reports historical records show that 4 Native American students were reported to have died while attending the school, but the records are likely incomplete and there could be other unreported deaths or unmarked graves at the Shawnee Indian Mission. The Shawnee tribe and others have been requesting an investigation into the school. They say they were not consulted before the current project was announced. They worry the project is moving along too quickly before the tribe's concerns are adequately addressed. The school housed students from several tribes. The U.S. Department of Interior is currently investigating the nation's treatment of Native students at the schools. The department is holding listening sessions about boarding schools in several locations, the most recent this week in South Dakota. A new study by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention finds Native Americans are 30% more likely than their white counterparts to be hospitalized with the flu. The CDC says Native residents also have lower flu vaccination rates. The agency says only 4 in 10 Native Americans are covered by a vaccine against the flu, compared to more than half for whites. The study covers the past 13 flu seasons. Blacks and Hispanics are also hospitalized at higher rates than the general population. The University of Oregon announced a new program last week that will cover tuition and fees for tribal members. The Home Flight Scholars Program will immediately allow any students who are members of any federally recognized tribe to receive financial assistance, and it's the latest in a series of efforts to boost higher education enrollment and graduation rates among tribal members. The Oregon Capital Chronicle reports in May, the state's Higher Education Coordinating Commission rolled out a grant that covers the average cost of attendance for all the state's public universities and colleges and 14 of the 18 private colleges in Oregon. Three of the public universities, including the University of Oregon, are going further, announcing they will offer in-state tuition to anyone who is a member of any of the 574 federally recognized tribes, no matter where they live. The National Center for Education Statistics says nationwide, Native students enroll at only half the rate of the general population between 18 and 24 years old. Also, a recent study found that 40% of Oregon's Native students still struggle to afford college even after receiving conventional financial aid. The University of Oregon says their program aims not only to increase enrollment, but also to combat financial issues and academic difficulties and help students connect with their culture. The program will offer a variety of services, everything from counseling and mentorship to tribal job placement and graduate study opportunities, and it creates a new Native American academic advisor position. Oregon now joins Montana and Michigan in making tuition for tribal members free at public universities, along with several universities choosing to do so independently, including the University of California system, which is the largest in the nation. For National Native News, I'm Daniel Montano.
The Arizona legislature saw a dozen anti-transgender bills introduced this year, mainly targeting young people. It's part of a national trend, but some experts see a disconnect between what the public supports and what lawmakers are enacting. It's one more reason anti-transgender laws are being challenged in court. Alex Gonzalez has more on the story.
Arizona saw a record number of anti-transgender bills in the state legislature this year, aimed largely at youth. The ones that passed are leading some to predict legal pushback will follow. The new Arizona laws will prohibit transgender youth from being on sports teams consistent with their gender identity and prohibit anyone under 18 from receiving gender-affirming health care. While anti-transgender laws are on the rise across the country, staff attorney with Lambda Legal, Kel Olson, says he sees a disconnect between what people support and what lawmakers are proposing.
As far as litigation, we have seen, again, because we see this type of law popping up across the country, it's no secret that these laws have been challenged and successfully challenged across the country.
According to a report from the Pew Research Center, 64% of Americans favor policies that protect transgender people from discriminatory practices in jobs, housing, and public spaces. However, the same report finds 58% think transgender individuals should play on sports teams that match the sex they were assigned at birth. Olson says sports bans have been successfully litigated and some are currently in court around the nation. Olson thinks there's no reason to expect a different response in Arizona.
It's really important that kids have the opportunity to play on sports teams with their peers, to be part of a team. So many studies have shown the beneficial impact that participating in team sports has on kids growing up. So there are really important reasons that kids' rights in that area need to be asserted.
Supporters of sports bans say it boils down to making sure the playing field is fair. Arizona, Arkansas, and Alabama are the states that have bans on gender-confirming medical care for kids under 18. Arizona's ban will go into effect in 2023. Just this week, a trial began in Arkansas that aims to challenge a similar law. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Arizona News Connection.
Pro-Palestinian advocates are defending student groups on the University of California's Berkeley campus for their pledge not to invite Zionist speakers. They say charges of anti-Semitism are unwarranted. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
Pro-Palestinian advocates are speaking out to support student groups at UC Berkeley Law School who voted not to host Zionist speakers, saying it's a matter of free speech. In August, a group called Law Students for Justice in Palestine asked other student groups to pledge not to invite speakers who support the Israeli occupation of Palestinian lands, and 14 groups out of 100 agreed. Dylan Saba, a staff attorney at Palestine Legal, who is Palestinian and Jewish, says the backlash the students are facing is unfair and could harm their future job prospects.
These students are being smeared in the media by members of Congress, left, right, and center. And so I think it's very critical to affirm that these students have the right to do this and to push back against these kind of bad faith attempts to smear this as anti-Semitism.
The charges of anti-Semitism began with an article in the Jewish Journal by Ken Marcus, a former Trump official from the Office of Civil Rights, who claimed Berkeley has established Jewish-free zones. Then the dean of the law school, Erwin Chemerinsky, who is Jewish, called for academic freedom, tolerance, and civility, and wrote in the Daily Beast that he would consider sanctions for groups that violate the law school's rules that no speaker can be excluded for being Jewish or for holding particular views. Saba says that the bylaw would exclude speakers based on political expression, not religion. He adds that there's a double standard when it comes to groups that support the Boycott, Divest, Sanctions movement, known as BDS.
A reproductive justice group would not be expected to host an anti-abortion speaker. In that same way, groups committed to Palestinian liberation should not be expected that they have to host someone who opposes those values.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Television and film has gotten more diverse in recent years, but one aspect of diversity, accent bias, isn't being addressed. One writer details that there are certain implications attached to various accents. Edwin J. Vieira has more.
As television and film has gotten more diverse, there are some areas people feel are not being addressed. Accent bias is one of them. Growing up in Pakistan, immigrant activist Sadia Khan found that people belonging to certain socioeconomic groups looked at how a person speaks English as a way to separate them from the masses. In the U.S., she observes that's still true. Khan sees that accent bias has permeated pop culture, with certain accents giving a first impression of who a person might be. One thing she notes is how a hierarchy of accents developed and the connotation of British accents.
Pick any TV show and you'll see anybody who has a British accent is automatically considered more intelligent, dynamic, worthy of conversation, smart in many ways.
She adds that people without a British or French accent on certain television shows might seem backwards or unintelligent. One show she cites is Loot on Apple TV, particularly the character of Jean-Pierre, played by Olivier Martinez. According to a survey done by Language Tutor Service Preply, British and French accents ranked as number one and number three, respectively, among both men and women as the most attractive accents. According to a UCLA report, people of color accounted for almost 39% of leads in the top films of 2021. However, this is still disproportionate with how many people of color make up a portion of the U.S. population, which is 42.7%. Khan believes breaking accent bias would be challenging since it forces people to unlearn certain beliefs.
Humans are conditioned to believe in certain things, and we can unlearn a lot that conditioning, accent bias being one. I think the more we hear people with different accents, the more normalized it gets.
Khan says while there are more people from diverse backgrounds appearing in different forms of media, there's not enough of them who are not native English speakers. She would like to see more characters in pop culture and people in different lines of work who have accents but are not subject to inherent cultural interpretations. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, Connecticut News Service.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is ready for rain.
Maybe Election Day should be moved to Halloween. Always a lot more trick than treats. Not to All Saints Day, but maybe to the Day of the Dead. The death of democracy, of political integrity, reminiscence of what seemed better times. For now, the news is polluted. Newspapers running polls so they have something to distract us with, to discourage us from voting, from thinking things can change. I can't wait for the election to be over, as all the finger-pointing and falling skies are drowned out by holiday hope and frenzy. Or are we too bedraggled and bruised by a tough economy, declining infrastructure, isolation to celebrate anything? I'm getting ready to dance in the rain when it gets here, and I promise not to complain about the lack of sun for at least 3 weeks. By then, winter will have settled in. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 19th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael and Josh Salem. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Nadia Ramlagan, Edwin J. Vieira, Alex Gonzalez, Daniel Montano, Suzanne Potter, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings.
And I'm Ken Jones. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are brought to you by our members, and we're very grateful. If you'd like to become a member and support all our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO's News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
I'm speaking with Kay Rambo, editor-in-chief of Street Roots, about the cover story of their latest issue, Fighting